Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Tuesday morning. Talking a little college football, and to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line. Actually, we're not going to the phone line because she's better than all of our guests, and she joins us via Zoom. Caroline Fenton with us now on the program. Caroline, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, that's that Zoom elitism, baby.
I love it.
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
That's why she's the best.
Good.
That's why we love her. Elite.
I like teams personally. Is that one of those teams?
Teams? Do you?
No, actually, I've never tried it, but I know some people have done it.
Okay.
Not a big teams fan.
Yeah, I think Zoom's way better.
Caroline, Texas waltzes into Tuscaloosa and they win 34-24 on Saturday. They take down Nick Saban. Jalen Milroe had some moments in the game where he looked pretty good, but a couple of bad turnovers in that game, and Alabama now finds himself at 1-1. Number one, what does this win mean for Texas and Steve Sarkisian? And where do you think Alabama goes from here?
I mean, this is the statement win. Like, this is the win that Texas needed. One, to prove that, okay, they're legitimate contenders. And two, think about the ego and the chin-uppedness, if you will, that Texas will walk into the SEC with next year. I mean, beating the class of the SEC. And I know that, you know, Georgia's recent success probably makes them the class of the league. But Alabama and Nick Saban have the dynasty of college football. And now they beat Alabama and come into the SEC next season. I mean, it was the best statement and biggest statement that Texas could have made. For me, I mean, this proves to me that I think Texas is a college football playoff contender. Like, I viewed that game as a pseudo playoff game. I think that Quinn Ewers and Steve Sarkisian did what a Nick Saban or an Alabama quarterback did. And that's waltz in, no matter where you are, whether it's Bryant Denny or your house, and you walk in with a certain sense of IDGAF-ness, that, you know, a sense of cool, calm, and collectedness that I think Nick Saban quarterbacks and Nick Saban coach teams usually have. And look, Quinn Ewers just looked the part. Like, I think I'm guilty of this, and maybe the college football world is guilty of it too. I feel like I just kind of forgot about Quinn Ewers, to be completely honest with you. He got injured last year in the Alabama game. Maybe he had like the sixth best Heisman odds, which is nothing to scoff at. But I think that he showed us that he is legit and he is as advertised. As far as what it means for Alabama, look, Alabama did not look good on Saturday. They didn't. I wanted Jalen Milroe to prove me wrong, that he could go into a game against a quality opponent, which Texas is. Texas is a good team, and a team that was going to take the run away from this Alabama offense and away from Jalen Milroe, and Jalen Milroe would have to throw his way out of it. And he proved on Saturday night that he just can't quite do that yet. I'm not saying he can't do it ever. I'm saying he can't do that yet. This Alabama team has a ton of talent, but also I think that on Saturday night, maybe I learned that Bryce Young and Will Anderson covered up a whole lot of inherent depth and talent issues of this Alabama team. And Jalen Milroe simply just is not Bryce Young. And Jalen Milroe cannot, you know, overcome some roster deficiencies that Alabama might be faced with at the moment. Look, Alabama is still a solid team, but I think Alabama might be a 9-3 and 10-2 team that could be good enough for a lot of teams in the SEC, but it might be waving a red flag for Alabama fans that this team is just not constructed like Nick Saban championship teams have been in the past.
No, I agree. I mean, Quinn Ewers was a quarterback game to me. Texas had the better quarterback, and you know, and
they had a better defensive line. They had a better offensive line. They had better playmakers. Texas was just the better team.
So, what's the SEC looking like now, Caroline? I mean, they really don't have any other opportunity. I know Ole Miss won at Tulane, but It's been a very disappointing non-league so far for the SEC. Is the SEC down?
Yeah. The SEC is totally down. I do want to hear something awfully bleak. With all of the opportunities that the SEC has had through 2 weeks to have statement wins, the most impressive SEC win so far of the season is Ole Miss at Tulane, a Group of Five team that didn't have their starting quarterback. Like, that's the most impressive SEC win. I mean, Auburn barely hung on against Cal. Mississippi State went to overtime with an average, at best, Arizona team. I mean, LSU loses to Florida State. USC loses to UNC. I say USC. South Carolina USC loses to UNC. Florida loses to Utah. Alabama loses to Texas. And Texas A&M gets their butts whooped at Miami, another team that's good, but not great. I mean, improved, but not an ACC contender. So, yeah, the SEC is absolutely down. And I think that that can be the product of a few things. You know, maybe the SEC is in a limbo period with head coaches, with coordinators, with quarterbacks. Maybe the SEC has been hit by the transfer portal, and that, you know, we're feeling the effects of the transfer portal, that, hey, now the small guys have all of the resources at their disposal that every SEC team has had. And it's not just the Alabamas and the Georgias and the LSUs that are picking up all the 4- and 5-star talent in the Southeast and really across the country, and everybody else is left to fend for themselves, that now it feels like maybe it is more of an even playing field. And we saw Deion Sanders, like, Colorado already has exceeded my expectations through 2 weeks, and Deion Sanders built that program entirely through the transfer portal. But that being said, I still think that Georgia's a national title contender. I still think there's a very high possibility that Georgia could win the national championship, and that the SEC is still victorious and continues this streak of championships. But still, yeah, I mean, the SEC is totally down. And if you're looking at it from an SEC homer perspective, that's not a good thing, you know, for a conference that's so used to being the class of college football. But really, I think that this is fun. Like, honestly, I think that college football has needed some shakeup. I think that there are college football fans on every other coast in the country that's probably gotten pretty bored of college football. And I think that this was... this is a freshness and a newness that the sport has really needed.
Caroline Fenton with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. You bring up the Texas A&M loss to Miami. What do you think this means for Jimbo and where it goes around? I mean, he's talking after the game about Miami players simulating the snap count or the clap on the other side of the ball, and that being why they're making mistakes offensively. You got Bobby Petrino in there now. It just feels like, you know, at some point in the not-too-distant future, to me anyway, contract aside, that it's going to come crashing down and burning for Jimbo at some point here pretty soon.
That's what it's looking like. It really is. And for the amount of talent that Texas A&M has across that defense, on the defensive line, in the secondary, like, Texas A&M's defense has no business looking as bad and confused as they looked against Miami on Saturday night. And it makes me think about, you know, what did Mike Elko, the former defensive coordinator at Texas A&M, who is now at Duke, he's the head coach at Duke, what kind of magic was he working on Texas A&M's defense to get them to that 2020 season where they were fifth in the country and just narrowly missed the college football playoff? Like, was it more about him than it was about Jimbo Fisher? That's kind of a scary thought that came through my mind. And I say scary thought for Texas A&M fans. Look, I think Connor Wigman, Texas A&M's quarterback, is the truth. I thought that he had a good game on Saturday. Throw the interceptions out. Don't look at the box score. Just looking at what he was able to do, rolling out of the pocket, making those off-platform throws, extending plays that maybe some other quarterbacks in college football wouldn't have been able to extend. But overall, the defense for Texas A&M looks atrocious and will be their Achilles heel, and probably Jimbo Fisher's Achilles heel. You know, I know the buyout is astronomical, but look, they got oil money. They can afford it.
Yeah, it's getting smaller.
It is.
It's getting closer.
Each passing year.
That's right.
It is dwindling, as are Texas A&M's opportunities to win.
Nice. So you mentioned Deion Sanders in Colorado, Caroline.
Yeah.
How good are they? How far can he take this team this year? Shedeur Sanders, how far can he take this team this year?
That's a really good question. Because Texas A&M, Colorado has a tough schedule this season. But I and they've got a really good test against Oregon next week. They play Colorado State this week. They'll roll Colorado State. I'm excited to see what this team looks like against Oregon, because I mean, allow me to be a total Debbie Downer, glass half empty kind of perspective of Colorado's schedule so far. Look, I think TCU, you know, yes, they were the national champion runner up, but they lost a whole lot of talent, including their starting quarterback from last season. And Nebraska is a rebuilding team in Matt Rule's first season that's trying to, you know, really change the offensive philosophy in Nebraska. But Colorado won those games fair and square, and they might have a Heisman contender. Take that back. They do have a Heisman contender in Travis Hunter on that team. So I think that team is disciplined. I think that team is bought into Deion Sanders' message, and I think that team has a whole lot of talent. Are they a playoff team? Beat Oregon, we can talk about it.
Caroline, last thing for you here. Tennessee doesn't look great against Austin Peay. Nope. They went 30-13. Passing game, we've talked about it so far on the show today, has not looked great so far for the Vols. They're a 6.5-point favorite against Florida on the road. What do you make of what you've seen from Tennessee's offense to this point, and what do you think of this matchup coming up Saturday against Florida?
Yeah, I have not been impressed in the slightest in Tennessee's offense. Now, on the other side of that, I have been impressed with the defense, but the passing game's just not there. And I think it's partly a Joe Milton problem where he just can't hit receivers. It's either an overthrow or an underthrow or an inaccurate throw of some sort. Receivers can't hold on to the football. That explosiveness that we saw in Tennessee's offense last year with Hendon Hooker, it's simply not there. And I think that Tennessee is going to have more success in the run game, because they've had more success in the run game than they've had in the passing game throughout the rest of the season. I don't know how many games you can win by running the football and overthrowing receivers. Now, maybe that that accuracy and that touch is something that Joe Milton can refine throughout the season. And maybe once you get into the nitty-gritty of the schedule, you know, Texas A&M later in the season, Alabama later in the season, maybe that can be refined. I'm not counting that out as a possibility in the slightest. But I think that this can be a really good confidence boost for Tennessee this weekend. Florida is a truly awful team. I know the Swamp is a tough place to play. I know that Joe Milton has struggled hitting receivers, and I know that Josh Heupel offense that was so electric at Oklahoma and electric at Missouri and so electric at Tennessee last year, we haven't seen that. But you can beat a bad Florida team on the road, and maybe that confidence can carry you through. But it doesn't look great. Like Tennessee, you know, when I said earlier in the college football season, is Tennessee a college football playoff contender? I seriously considered it for a second. Now, from what I've seen, no. Tennessee looks more like a 9-3, 10-2 team.
Caroline Fenton joins us every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock here on the program. You can catch her every morning starting at 11 o'clock here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Y'all are the best. Chat soon.
We'll react to what Caroline had to say. Take your thoughts on some college football, 615-737-1025. We'll get into Alabama's loss against Texas coming up next. Also get into Vanderbilt's loss at Wake Forest over the weekend as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Call TJ's team today to see why they're referred to so often. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. Live from our 102.5 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Thanks to Caroline Fenton for being with us in the last segment. Joe Vanderbilt on the road on Saturday, a 10 a.m. start, or at least it was. I mean, I guess it technically was a 10 a.m. start.
And then it was
an hour and a half delay. Vanderbilt's getting pretty good at this weather delay stuff so far.
Yeah, they got a real knack for it.
Yeah. Not fun.
And then neither was the game for Vanderbilt.
Yeah, fun. The game did not go very well for the Doors on Saturday. So you look at what happens on Saturday against Wake Forest. You know, they come out, A.J. Swan immediately with the turnover. You have the weather delay after that. They're actually able to hold Wake Forest in the red zone to a field goal after that. So you're saying, okay, well, it's not a great start, but at least they didn't give up the touchdown. And then really after that, like a couple of more turnovers for Vanderbilt. The defense wasn't really able to slow down Wake Forest all that much, and it ends up being a 36-20 final score. So you go on the road, you lose by 16 points in a game that I was really interested to see where Vanderbilt was from kind of a litmus test standpoint. We've talked about it. Worst case scenario, if you're going to reach a bowl game, in my opinion, is 3-1 non-conference. So that's still on the table for Vanderbilt. They got a chance to get there, but I thought all in all, a disappointing day for Vanderbilt on the road against Wake Forest.
Yeah, they had opportunities. I mean, their passing offense moved at will. They made some big plays in the run game. The offense, when it wasn't making mistakes, was really explosive.
Yep.
The defense, you know, had its opportunities, but, you know, you just downfield, like, you know, you get them in third and long, and you just commit like a PI on a ball that's not going to be completed. And if you just let the play out and just try to play proper technique, you get to stop. But instead, I mean, if you're going to tackle a receiver, yep, then you've guaranteed the outcome. And I know it's always easy to say, you know, when you're not on the field, but just some big mistakes. The big mistake of the game was they get a touchdown, they get it to 3, they get a stop. It's late in the first half. They have a chance to maybe go in, get points, be tied at halftime. And, you know, Jaden McGowan, who's been great this year, gets hit right after he catches a punt, fumbles, return for a touchdown. That's just such a swing in a game like that. And then there was a call in that game that, you know, I've heard you have complained many times about targeting. And the, you know, at times people getting ejected from games, you know, when they shouldn't be. And there certainly are times like that. And I think this is a great example of something that they need to revisit, which is you can have a personal foul and not have the targeting that removes a player from the game. Because Will 100%. Shepard got hit in the head, got his helmet knocked off. That knocked the ball out of his hands. And, you know, it turned out to be it wasn't helmet to helmet, so they took the targeting off. But they rewarded the defense with a stop on a play when it was a personal foul.
Yeah.
Like, so, and they used to do this in the early days of targeting. They would do the personal foul still in place, targeting, take it away. You can't reward the defense for that play. That was a ridiculous call, and it's hugely costly to Vanderbilt. It was a fourth down that they, again, Will Shepard catches the ball, he's not hitting the head.
Right.
So that's, again, we just can't get it right with that thing. But regardless, Vanderbilt gave up way too many chunk plays. And I, their defense just right now,
it's not good.
It's disappointing to me. I thought they would be more competitive on that side of the ball, more sound and solid, and they aren't. Now, last year they got to a certain point with their defense in SEC play and played awfully well against – some teams. So that's a lot of progress needs to be made. The offense, I still believe, absolutely can do damage to people, but you also have to take away the mistakes. AJ Swan had that early pick, you know, that was kind of a tone setter.
Yep. AJ Swan ends up with 3 touchdowns, but also 2 picks on the day for Vanderbilt. Like you said, I mean, they ran the ball for 109 yards, 4-5 a pop on the ground. AJ Swan threw for 314 yards. You know, Will Shepard was really good. London Humphreys was great. 4 catches, 109 yards, and a touchdown for Vanderbilt.
Had a huge play.
Had a huge play, 48-yarder in that game. So, you know, you feel good about him moving forward. But then you look at the defensive side of the ball. You know, we talked with Clark Lee last week. Wake Forest likes to take their shots, and they did in this game. But Mitch Griffiths, I think he's 17-26, 196 yards, 2 touchdowns. Good numbers. The thing that stood out to me was they got torched on the ground. 48 carries, 288 yards. 6 yards a pop for Wake Forest running the football.
Yeah. And look, it's a tough offense. You know, it's that option. They have that slow mesh thing, and it's an option every play, basically. But, they 288 yards kind of speaks for itself, right? Like,
yeah.
you can't expect to win many football games giving up that kind of yardage on the ground. So, some of that, I mean, I still think they have some good players, you know, up front and things like that. I think they're still better up front than they are in the back end, but they had a lot of issues trying to stop Wake Forest.
What did you make of the Texas-Alabama game? Alabama loses to the Longhorns. It's a huge win, obviously, for Sarkisian and really that football program, going on the road, taking down Alabama in their house. Jalen Milroe, quarterback for Alabama. I mean, he makes every now and then he'll make a throw where you're just like, okay, looks pretty good. Obviously, we know that he can run, and he broke the pocket a couple times, looked good doing that the other night, but also a couple of just killer turnovers from Jalen Milroe, and that ends up being the difference in the game. Quinn Ewers looked great on Saturday. That Alabama defense, again, giving up some big plays down the field, and here Nick Saban finds himself 1-1 after two games, and I don't know that the quarterback question has been answered yet for Alabama.
No, but I think it's kind of obvious that they just don't have the kind of quarterback room that you need at Alabama. So I think Milroe's going to, you know, keep playing, and they're just going to have to hope he gets better. They're still going to win most of the games, but I mean, it's pretty clear. The other two guys aren't. I mean, that's why he started, and they didn't.
Yep.
And so they're limited. I mean, I agree with what Caroline said. You know, I mean, it's a huge win for Texas. Texas is flat out better because I think largely because of their quarterback. Does this mean Arch Manning? Does Arch Manning get into the portal now? Ewers is eligible for the draft after this year, right?
He is.
That's going to be interesting because, you know, people haven't been talking about him too much. In that regard, it's a loaded QB draft class, but he's talented. I think he's kind of a sneaky prospect here. So, it's just a big disappointment for Alabama. I watch them play right now, and I think about Tennessee, Bama last year, and obviously both teams are very different at quarterback, but Tennessee's got a chance to go down there and win that game.
Hey, Shedeur Sanders looked pretty good again on Saturday.
He's slinging it around. Fun to watch. You know, and it's not perfect, but he is so fun to watch. His drifting left in some of the passes he throws, and some the touch he puts on some of those passes. There's another guy, by the way, who's eligible for the draft this year and is a really interesting prospect. I mean,
Mel Kiper moved him up to the number 3 quarterback in his prospect list.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, the big thing with him is, you know, I know some people think, like, Kaharski's like, what are you, 5'10", 5'11", how tall is he? You know, I'm like, no, he's listed at 6'2". I don't know. Is that a lie?
I have no idea.
I mean, you know, maybe he's 6'1", but, yeah, if you can play like that, I think he's absolutely a prospect. I don't know if he's the third best, but Ewers and Sanders, and we've already talked about, like, McCarthy and Milton and, you know, obviously May and Williams. It's really interesting QB situation right
Bo
now.
Bo Nix. Yeah, there's a lot.
Bo Nix is playing great.
A lot of guys out there. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll get back into the Titans coming up next. What's a lie? What's not? Based off week 1 of action in the NFL. We'll get into all that. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road coming up at 7:45. Looking forward to that. Gentry Estes from the Tennessean will join us at 8 o'clock. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. Right now, taking your thoughts on the Titans. Joe, we talked about this a little bit earlier. There's a popular saying about week 1 in the NFL. Week 1 is a liar. We've heard this many times. We've talked about the example that apparently Daniel Brunskill provided Mike Vrabel after the week 1 loss to the Saints about the 49ers last year getting beat by Chicago on the road, and then Chicago was the worst team in the league. 49ers went on to play in the NFC title game. Obviously, you look around the league this week, Buffalo just lost. Cincinnati got destroyed by Cleveland on the road. Joe Burrow had 82 yards passing. You know, week 1, as you look around the league, there can be some results that leave you scratching your head a little bit. I mean, look, even the Cowboys game, I think the Cowboys are a better team than the Giants are. They're not 40 points better than the Giants are. So some interesting results around the league this week, including the Titans. I mean, you have your quarterback throw 3 interceptions. You missed 2 wide-open guys. Actually, missed 3 wide-open guys, but 2 of them would have been for touchdowns for sure. And it leaves you kind of scratching your head after week 1 and thinking, all right, well, what does this mean? What are we worried about? What are you not worried about from a Titans standpoint? And a lot of people, if you're a Titans fan, would say, like, Tannehill, I'm worried about the quarterback based on the way that he played in week 1. And it's such an interesting conversation with him to me, Joe, because he was so bad Sunday. It's hard for me to believe that he is that bad again at some point moving forward. I'm expecting him to bounce back and to play well this Sunday against the Chargers, who, oh, by the way, just gave up 466 passing yards to Tua last week. Now, a lot of that was also Tyreek Hill running wide open and doing whatever he wanted to do. But I'm expecting a bounce-back performance from Ryan Tannehill where, number one, you're taking care of the football, and number two, when you have guys that are open, you're hitting them like we've seen Tannehill do throughout the course of his career. So I would not put Tannehill yet in this category for Titans fans where I'm just totally worried about him. It was awful on Sunday, and there's no denying that. I'm expecting a bounce back. The offensive line, different discussion. I'm worried about that moving forward with the Titans.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, ultimately, it's the biggest concern going in, and I think it continues to be. And if those guys can get better, if there is some building off the second half at New Orleans when it got a little better, then I think things will look better overall because Tannehill, like you said, I just can't imagine he's going to play like that again. It'll be interesting to hear what he says this week. I mean, he typically doesn't delve too much into what went wrong or whatever. I mean, look, you miss some throws, but the offensive line's still the biggest concern. I mean, I'm moving secondary up on the concern list because one, just some real bad plays Sunday where you give up these big chunk plays, and then two, the health, which continues to be a problem.
Yeah, health continues to be a problem in the secondary. You know, if Fulton, let's say Fulton either is limited or can't go this week, and Hooker can't go. Well, number one, what are you doing at safety?
And Trey Avery can't go. Is he back?
Trey Avery's got a hamstring that he's dealing with too. So, you know, obviously Caleb Farley's not ready to get out there yet. So, I mean, you're thin already in the secondary. I didn't think Sean Murphy Bunting looked great on Sunday against the Saints, and that doesn't mean that he's going to be like some disaster moving forward, but I didn't think it was very good for him on Sunday. I thought Roger McCreary was fine, but if you're already, you know, this thin in the secondary and you're banged up heading into week two, that's not great news when you're taking on Justin Herbert and that Chargers offense. Now, the one thing I will say about that, we'll get into that matchup later in the week, but Eckler dealing with an injury this week too, and his status is apparently in question for Sunday. So we'll see.
And he looked really good before he got banged up. So no, it's this week. Well, we just offensive line, secondary. So let's bring in the Chargers with that passing attack, that quarterback, those receivers, and that pass rush.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Pretty decent test for the Titans.
What about the Derrick Henry usage part of this? You brought this up earlier. Vrabel pretty strongly indicated yesterday that Derrick Henry's going to be used. He's going to be a big part of the offense as they move forward here. We talked about the 48% of the offensive snaps that he was out there. I would look for that to increase pretty dramatically on Sunday against the Chargers. I think they need it to increase against the Chargers. Got to be able to run the football and attack the defense that way. But you know, as you look at this offense, I think the other thing to keep in mind is like Tim Kelly, it's a new offense, it's a new scheme, all those things, but he's also got new personnel that he's dealing with as a play caller, and sometimes we see it takes some time to figure that out. Like even Arthur Smith, and the biggest difference was the quarterback. There's no question about that. Mariota was in the first 6 weeks of that year in 2019. They looked terrible, and people were looking around and saying, all right, that's who you hired as offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't go look outside the organization and you promote the tight ends coach to be the offensive coordinator. And then you make the quarterback switch and Derrick Henry starts to play well and Taylor Lewan gets back from suspension and the offensive line gels together and Arthur Smith looks great for the next 2 years, and that's why he's a head coach in Atlanta right now. So I'm not saying that that's what's coming from Tim Kelly. I'm just saying that we have seen examples of an offensive coordinator figuring things out as the season goes along. Like even LaFleur here, right? I think he's very good to start with, and then they started giving the ball to Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry forced them to give him the ball with the way that he transformed as a player, and it started to look a little bit different in the second half of that season.
Yeah, yeah, people forget how those are both good examples. Arthur Smith in particular, how much when they were 2-4, shut out at Denver, just awful. And, you know, Lewan's back by then. I mean, there was a lot of what is up with this Arthur Smith guy? What is Vrabel doing? I mean, Vrabel didn't even hire him to be on the staff. Just promoted a guy who, you know, had been on the previous staff.
Yep.
We saw how it worked out. So yeah, there's some trial and error in there and things like that. The biggest thing there was the quarterback switch, obviously. Now, this team does have a lineman coming back, Petit Frere, but I don't think there's going to be quite the impact that Taylor Lewan was coming back from suspension four years ago. But, yeah, it's very early. And the Derrick Henry usage thing is interesting. It's, I mean, I was surprised to see that number at the end, but I was also surprised to see it one series, and it was a three and out, but it was like one series with he did not get in at all. Yep. I'm like, man, that's a stunner, you know? So I think there probably will be a more concerted effort, I would think, to have him on the field more. But I also think that Tajay Spears has to be involved. They believe that, and I agree that Tajay Spears has to be a big part of what they do. I mean, he's a guy who can make a difference for this team. So some of them together for sure. But if Derrick Henry gets into any sort of rhythm like he did in the first half of New Orleans, I think you do have to sort of make a real effort to try to lean in on that, especially if you're in a close game again in the second half.
Cody on the text line says, what do y'all think about Tannehill's arm looking considerably weaker, or is that just me? It's from Cody.
No, I thought the same thing. I'm pretty far away up in that press box and in the Superdome, but I thought the same thing. Other people who cover the Titans who are on press row thought the same thing too. It's like, man, that ball looks like it just didn't have his arm of last leg. But I still think the bigger issue was he threw it late and into coverage.
Yep.
So I still think the decision-making on some of those plays was still the bigger issue, but I agree it did not look like he had great velocity on a few of his throws. Not sure. It's early, you know. That's one of those that let's wait and see. But I thought the same thing.
Well, that would be, if that's going to be what it is, that would be where Tannehill moves into my concern list. Like, if he's lost some zip on it and he's not making the same throws that he's usually making. And look, it's 1 week. So I don't know that I'm quite willing to go there yet in terms of he's just lost his arm strength and it's going to be like, you know, old age Vinny Testaverde out there pushing the ball around. I don't think that's going to happen. But I will say, I mean, the deep shot to Chris Moore, say what you will about the pass interference, it probably was pass interference. It was also an underthrown ball, right? I mean, he did look late on some of the decisions that he made. It was just a bad day. Like, even Vrabel yesterday in the aftermath of the game, watching the game film, just kind of sounded like he was mystified at Ryan Tannehill's performance, which I don't really know what to make of that. Like, I go back to what I said originally this segment. Like, I expect him to bounce back and play better on Sunday. But if he doesn't and he looks bad again on Sunday, what does that mean? Like, what does that mean for this season and this year if you're the Titans?
That's bad. But, you know, someone asked yesterday about the disconnect between we're all saying he looks great in camp and then he didn't play. I'm like, well, that's because he did look good in camp. Matt, watching him in camp, I didn't think there was some big velocity issue or anything like that.
Yeah.
So, everything else, you know, defense got him a fair amount. They got the offensive line. They got Tannehill a turnover here, you know, here and there. But for the most part, he looked good in camp and then looked terrible in the first game. So, if that continues, then we have all kinds of different discussions. You know, as far as Tim Kelly – if he just – and I agree, Vrabel was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But if he – again, he hits one of those, and we're talking about how Tim Kelly drew up the winning touchdown on a really creative play to get someone wide open. I mean, that's not easy to get someone wide open in the NFL.
That's the thing.
They did.
Arm strength was not the problem on either one of those two.
That is true. Right. That was –
he overshot a Conquo and – and led Spears about 4 yards out of bounds.
Wide left to Spears. Yeah. So just so used to Tannehill being accurate.
Yeah.
It's been pretty consistent. The decision-making at times in his career, you know, has not been good enough, but the accuracy's been good.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 745 on the program. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
What the hell is wrong with people? Jamaica, ooh, I wanna take-
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode. You can check it out every morning at 7:45. Joe Rexrode's rant of the day. Joseph, fresh off a trip to New Orleans, back in town today. I turn things over to you.
Yeah, and so we're going to talk about that trip. We're going to talk a little bit about plane etiquette.
Okay.
So, first of all, I think anyone who lives around here who does air travel much probably flies Southwest. If not, I'll tell you about Southwest. I mean, I fly it a lot. It's, you know, not assigned seating.
It is not.
So it's, you know, you get a boarding position, and then you get on the plane and pick whatever seat is available that you want. So I got on the plane in New Orleans Saturday morning, and I wanted to sit as close to the front as possible. It was an early flight, and I wanted to get to a TV to watch Vanderbilt Wake Forest. So came down. I have to sit on the aisle, okay? I have to sit on the aisle. I checked in early enough to get an A boarding position. For people who don't know, it's like A, B, and C. So A means you're going to get a good seat. So walked on the plane.
Upper class.
Yeah, there's no first class or anything like that. It's just all it is at the 24-hour mark, be ready to hit the button. Because I'm not A-list. I didn't fly enough last year to make A-list. Yeah, I'm boring you with the details. But get on the plane, and it's like third or fourth row. There's a couple, a married couple. So the wife is in the window. A man is in the middle aisle. They have their Titans stuff on. The Titans fans going down to New Orleans for the game. So I say, hey, this open? Yeah. Okay, good. Sit in the aisle seat. I have to sit in the aisle seat. I'm 6'3", and I'm all legs, and I have to have an aisle seat, or it's a real problem. Like, it's like a real problem. So I'm on the aisle, which is great. That means that I always put you know, the outside leg in the aisle a lot until people walk by, right? So the dude next to me apparently thinks because he took the middle seat so his wife could have the window seat, thinks that he can just sit there spread-legged and infringe on my spot. Meanwhile, he's wearing freaking John Stockton shorts, and he has very hairy legs, okay? And so it's to the point where, like, and I'm wearing shorts too, and like, even if our legs aren't touching, the fuzz of our legs is touching, and I'm really grossed out by this.
That's pretty gross.
So now I have to take both my legs and put them in the aisle and sit like sideways because this dude falls asleep with his legs just spread out. Like, dude, if you are too tall to sit in a middle seat and you want to sit next to your wife, then both of you take an aisle seat somewhere else, and then you can talk to each other across the aisle. But if you're going to sit in a middle seat, you are sitting in the middle seat. You don't get a seat and a half. So then I got both of my legs in the aisle, and, of course, they're walking by, and, you know, the stewardess is slamming into me, and it's like, so then I go back. It's like now the fuzzes are touching, and it's just awful.
The fuzzes.
No, God, please, no.
I mean, exchanging leg hair.
Yeah, it's
beautiful.
Just, yeah. I mean, dude, like, do you have to really wear shorts that short?
That's awful. I've never had that happen to me.
So it's just, I would never sit in a middle seat unless I've had to before, and it's horrible. But even when I've had to at 6'3 with long legs, I have like the legs of a 6'6 person and like the torso of a 5'10 person.
Yeah.
Like, or whatever, you know. I mean, I've sat in the middle seat and I've had to suck it up and put my legs like this up into my chest, and you don't get to take somebody else's space. So, I mean, I could have, you know, complained or whatever, and I guess that's on me. I guess I could have said something to him, but it was just like, and then he fell asleep, though. You know what I mean? So he's like, sprawls out.
Man, you got to do something with your leg.
Yeah, I probably should have, but I just basically sucked it up and put my both legs out in the aisle, and it was like an hour flight. So
usually,
whatever. Don't sit in the middle unless you understand what that means.
Usually, when somebody is infringing on my space, my own personal space on a flight, it's doing what is probably my biggest pet peeve on a plane, which is when you land. Not even when you get to the gate, sometimes, but when you land, and people just start standing up. Like, and you know, usually I don't really care where I sit.
Oh, you would hate me then.
Oh, yeah. Usually I don't really care where I sit. Like,
I'll just look for something that's open. So a lot of times I also forget to check in, or at least check in quick enough. So I'm usually in B or C. So I'm either in the back of the plane or towards the middle of the plane, back enough to where you know, hey, it's going to be a minute before you get off this plane. And the amount of people that just stand up, and I've found myself in the middle seat before too, where somebody to the right of me is just like standing up, and like their belly is just right here on the side of my head.
Well, yeah.
As they're waiting.
If you're
going to
stand up, you got to look.
Get out of the way. What are you doing? You're not going anywhere for the next 15 minutes. Why are you standing up all over my personal space? Trying to get your bag out right now when you're not moving anywhere for 15 minutes. Just stop. It drives me insane.
Well, so, okay, but that's fine. I agree that when – because I am a stander for sure.
I wouldn't like you on a plane.
Yeah, like I got to stretch my legs out, man. I'm sorry. Now, I am trying to be conscious of that. I look all around. I'm like, okay, because you can – I mean, you can stand. As long as you're mostly pressed up against your empty seat,
sure,
it's fine.
At least you just don't be touching other people.
Yeah, of course. But especially this flight – damn right I was standing up. Like, get me away from leg fuzz.
Now this,
with the
I don't
Stockton
really blame
shorts.
You.
Yeah.
I got a text that says, Joe, why are you wearing shorts on a plane? Do people not wear shorts on a plane? I wear shorts on a plane all the time.
I just was getting off in New Orleans. It was about 97 degrees and humid. I'm not going to wear pants to New Orleans in early September.
Yeah.
Phil, nice text there, Phil.
Oh yeah, very nicely done. Now the I can't believe like he didn't. So I'm trying to paint the picture here. Is the leg hair touching before he falls asleep, or is this after he falls asleep?
Well, I mean the legs were touching, but then I got some room, and it's like God, still fuzz. So I have to just take the leg all the way out.
Because that's the other thing. Like, there's got to be some personal awareness on his part of oh. My leg is touching this other human being. Maybe let's take it away from him.
Right, but like I said, I mean, this guy basically passed the hell out. Like, I think before we took off.
Jeez,
you know. So they're just sitting there, just yeah. Well,
that's the other thing.
They should have just laid down in two seats.
I can't sleep on a plane. Like I
can't either anymore.
I don't have
I used to.
Anywhere near enough trust in people, so I don't sleep on. I've slept on a plane one time, and I was up prior to that 36 consecutive hours. So that's the only time I've ever slept on a plane.
Yeah.
And it was like a 40-minute ride from Chicago to here.
I'm jealous of people who can say, I can't do it anymore, which is terrible. But, yeah, good for you, man. Good for him that he was able to fall asleep. But just, you know, fall asleep in your seat, not in somebody else's seat.
That's the wildest thing. I mean, there's all sorts of, like, airline etiquette. The standing up before you're even close to moving is the one thing that drives me nuts. I have seen people, and this has been a very rare occurrence, but I have seen people before that'll be sitting in like the middle of the plane or the very back, where they'll get up and they'll try to get up before everybody else and just start walking up the aisle, from the back. And it makes me want to fight them. Like, I physically want to go over there and fight them.
So,
but I will get put on a no-fly list, so I don't do it.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting point, because in other countries, it is not like, just wait and each row goes. It's a, like, you will see that where it's like, brr, just rip through.
It's,
you
probably
know,
a good thing I'm not there.
Yeah. And look, I mean, sometimes, I mean, to me, if sometimes it's like the flight's late and you have to make a connection. So then you say, people, sorry, I got to make a connection. Great. I mean, I get it. Go. Let them go.
Sure.
You know? But then, say it. Say yeah. something. Yeah. Don't just start barging
stampeding
through people.
Yeah. Drives me nuts.
I mean, put a sign on your head, like, missing connection,
yes,
or something like that.
This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. We'll get his thoughts on all things Tennessee Titans. We'll look back at the Week 1 loss to the Saints, look ahead at the matchup against the Chargers as well.
LD says, who the hell was this guy, Teen Wolf? Wasn't that fuzzy?
Gentry Estes coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.